Brett Hollander back here on WBAL. Our athletic directors will stay with us for one segment after the 8 o'clock hour. We're talking about some pretty interesting subjects right now as it pertains to the world of college athletics. And it's, again, impossible to ignore. I thought Real Sports with Brian Gumbel on HBO did a great story a couple of weeks ago about academics. Again, we're talking about the schools they mentioned were UNC, and there was a report that came out from the University of North Carolina that kind of sparked this. And they mentioned Oklahoma State, I believe, and a couple of other schools about the quote-unquote academics and forced classes to fit into a certain athletic schedule. And then just last week, Roy Williams, one of the faces of college athletics with a couple of NCAA basketball national championships to his name, is answering questions about a former player saying he essentially never went to class. And everyone write, and he had tutors write his paper. He never had to be anywhere. And then the story, I think it was from Oklahoma State, of kids taking Swahili to make sure they could play football and get their practice schedule in. How, I guess people want to know how commonplace this sort of practices are. And is there anything the NCAA can do to actually enforce, I guess at a school-by-school level, that these kinds of practices can be stopped or are not going on?
I'll answer from my end. I've been fortunate in this business. I've never been around. I've never been at a school that has done anything like that. I've never seen it. And I don't think it's nearly as prevalent as the media likes to play it out. And I do think there are some unique situations where somebody thought it would be a good idea to, hey, this is my chance to help out the program, and I can be tight with the coaches and the players, so I'm going to do some of these things, and then it blows up in everybody's faces. So I don't think it's nearly as prevalent as people think. And, I know, like, at our institution, for example, I mean, the academic support areas that we have, and we invest a lot of money in that area, to if we're going to ask these young women and men to spend as much time that they do representing the university and playing sports, then we need to provide them some support to help them with their academics, with all the missed class time and so forth. But all that reports through to the provost's office. And so, you know, I have to deal with the provost on certain things. I mean, I was telling Jim today about, you know, we're looking at changing a basketball game time, and I've got to talk with some of the academic folks on our campus just to make sure that they're okay with that. Because we monitor that very closely about missed class time and you know, how does that mesh up to finals and so forth. So, and I think most campuses are like that.
You know, to touch on what Tim said, I think it's true that every institution, so whether it's the Power Five or our institutions, try to be integrated with the more broad institution in every facet, academically included. I think it's easier to see evidence of that in institutions like ours. I think it's more difficult at a school in one of those power conferences because of what surrounds their programs, primarily their revenue sport programs, in terms of media attention. And so I think to the general public and the general population, the good things that they are really doing get clouded by, again, one or two missteps that might happen at some institutions that are more similar to theirs.
Yeah, Brett, the two things that keep me up in the middle of the night are one, finances, which we talked a little bit about.
Fair enough.
And two is academics, you know, and making sure that we're doing all I can for our kids and making sure that we have the checks and balances, you know, and we're making sure that we're putting the resources into it. And just like Tim at Towson, we have three full-time academic support people who report to another area of the university. They don't, you know, they don't report to me. The performance reviews aren't done by me. They work closely with us, you know, making sure that we have the resources, you know, for tutors who, again, don't report through athletics, that we have resources for summer school, because for some of these kids, you know, taking a class like an organic chemistry or a high-level foreign language is sometimes better for them to focus in the summer. I think it's the checks and balances, and I think most schools are doing a really, really good job of it. But, you know, there are unfortunately, some bad people out there that make some bad decisions, and I don't think there's bad schools.
Right.
You know, I really think that when you get to the level of some of the schools that you mentioned, that there are, and I hate the word booster because I just think it sounds so rogue, but there are people out there that don't really care about the institution they view that team like almost as a professional team, and they will do anything that they can to help that person. I think that as an athletic director is what you really get worried about, is about those people out there that can impact, you know, your kids, your school, and, you know, don't have really any affinity for your institution other than, you know, they're football boosters.
We have to take a quick break, but you guys are going to hang with us through the 8 o'clock hour for a quick segment. I want to ask you about where this goes from here with the NCAA as far as paying players, what's happening at Northwestern with their attempts to unionize, and what's next. And I think you guys have brought up a lot of interesting points from the NCAA standpoint about public relations, and they need an overhaul starting there in that department. And also let you guys explain anything cool coming up on your campuses. We'll do that when we come back here on BAL.